regardless of what you hear in the news and your business advisor, your coach, your CPA, your partners or whatever, we always tell people, don't hesitate to apply. You can't disqualify yourself up front. You kind of have to ask yourself, do you want to save your business? Know where you were before the pandemic. Were you going to have a banner year? Was it going to be better than 19? Do you have your numbers for 19? Are you going to be able to survive COVID? If you are, great. What does that look like? Does your 2021 look like your 19? If you don't know, then meet with somebody and kind of understand that and know that.
It's no secret that the coronavirus is affecting all of us as individuals. But the effect it's having on business, especially small business, is unprecedented. We need a game plan, and fast. If we're going to survive this, we need resources and we need each other. We can't do it alone. I'm Jesse Torres, and this is Hack My Business. With my background in economic and workforce development, disaster preparedness, and general business strategy, I know I can help you navigate this scary time in your business and beyond. It's all about resiliency. I'll have the most current solutions and best practices available so we can ensure your business not only survives this crisis, but thrives once we start moving forward again. Co-hosting with me will be my colleague, Sid Varakara, principal of 10 Page Memo. We'll have invited experts to help us navigate through the current noisy landscape of resources and programs that are being made available today and who will be able to prepare us for tomorrow. Let's do this together. I'm Jesse Torres, and this is Hack My Business.
You're listening to Hack My Business in partnership with Avant House Media. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to like and leave us a review of your thoughts on the show.
Hi, and welcome to Hack My Business. This is Jesse Torres, host of Hack My Business, and I'm here with my co-host, Sid Varakara. Today, we're going to be talking about the number one most requested area of support for small businesses, access to capital. Capital is the lifeblood of every small business, and it's made of cash, cash equivalents, and marketable securities. Small businesses and entrepreneurs rely on capital to get started, to sustain themselves, and to grow. For many of us, determining how to best secure capital and apply for maximum effectiveness in our business is among the most challenging aspects of starting and running a business. Today, we're bringing in one of our really good friends, Scott Rogalski, director of the Northern California Small Business Development Center Finance Center. We're talking with him about the best strategies and tips for entrepreneurs and small businesses who are seeking capital to launch or grow their business, and his special considerations for COVID-19 impacted businesses. For those of you who are uncertain about whether to dig into your savings, borrow from friends or family, or how to approach a private lender or venture capitalist, today's show is meant for you to give you some great insights to help you make the right financing decision for your business. Sid, are you ready to talk money with Rogalski?
I am ready to talk anything with Rogalski, Jesse. But this is such a great topic to talk about with Rogalski because, like, as you and I both know, he gets really excited about access to capital and figuring out solutions for small businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he's definitely been a go-to for me on all kinds of financing questions that I've had in regards to working with small businesses. So I'm just really excited. It's always fun to talk to Scott. Scott, welcome to Hack My Business.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Jesse and Sid. I'm really excited to be here today.
Scott, before we dive into today's topic, we really want to have you share a little bit about your background. Tell us a little bit about your role at the Northern California Small Business Development Center and some of the work that you've been doing across the state to help small businesses figure out their financing approach.
Before I got to the Small Business Development Center, my background is in business development and sales, working at a national and regional banks, mostly around small business lending. I did that for about 10 to 12 years. The reason why I quit lending is I got really tired of saying no to business owners around financing. I felt that banks didn't really tell the full truth as to why they were declining people. So my role as the director of the Finance Center for Northern California SBDC Network, Small Business Development Center, we cover the most 36 northern counties of the state from the Oregon border down the coast to Santa Cruz, all 9 counties of the Bay Area, southeast to Stockton and back up to the Oregon border. So I manage a team of about 50 finance lending advisors that focus on nothing but helping businesses access capital to either start, grow, buy an equipment or buy a building or possibly even buy a business. So what our approach at the Small Business Development Center is we take an educational approach with helping businesses access capital by teaching them what the lenders are looking for and how best to structure their story of credit, collateral, cash flow to increase the odds of them getting approved. We help them shop the market for the right lender at no cost.
That's awesome. And I know you've been extremely busy during this time, Scott, and we're going to dive into that and all the different work you've been doing relative to COVID-19. But we really want to talk about some of the fundamentals, right, and some of the best practices around accessing capital, especially for those folks who are really unfamiliar with how to approach it. Maybe they're starting their business for the first time. But, you know, as you know, access to capital is a really big topic to cover. So I thought what we could do is start really at the beginning. So maybe you're an entrepreneur with just a vision, you're a newly formed business, you have little to no cash on hand, and you need to start buying things to get off the ground. You know, you're going to buy office supplies, maybe you need to buy restaurant equipment, maybe you're thinking about launching in some kind of advertising campaign to get you off the ground. And maybe all you have is just a little bit of savings from your previous employer. Maybe you have a wealthy aunt who's looking to support her favorite nephew, or maybe you're just eyeing all those credit cards you have with some balance remaining on them, or you're even looking at all the different flashing digital ads on your browser from online lenders. How should you be mapping out your financing strategy at this very early stage? What do you recommend?
Yeah, those are great questions. Those are also great examples of what people normally go for. They go for friends, families, and fools, the three Fs. But you know, the most important thing to remember when mapping out your financing strategy to figure out how to get the funds for your business for when you're launching it, is to kind of really step back and understand that it's going to take longer than you think to access the right capital. And it's also going to take more than you think to accomplish the goals that you're looking for. So it's really important to start early, if possible, 3 to 6 months before you actually need the capital. For traditional financing with bank financing, it takes anywhere from 30 to 90 days from the time that you apply to the time they actually get the money in your bank. So it's really important to plan. To your point, Jesse, like, you know, most entrepreneurs start by using their savings, their retirement, then they go to credit cards before they get a loan. And I actually challenge entrepreneurs, instead of giving up equity, which a lot of them love to do, is to find, you know, possibly find your local SBDC office, SBA office, maybe some other consultant or advisor, and ask them how to help you get financing before you exhaust all your internal funds. Because if you, cash is king. If you exhaust all your cash, then you don't really have anything to fall back on. And you're supposed to use opium, right? You're supposed to use other people's money. That's what you're supposed to use. And the best way to do that is to possibly borrow from a lender or a bank. And there's advisors out there at our organization that can help you do that at no cost.
Not to just make a plug for SBDC, and to be fully transparent, so everybody knows, I used to be the regional director for an SBDC program here in California, but I always saw that as the critical work of the SBDCs to be that mentor, to be that guide, to help people think about strategy when it comes to financial planning. And even before they even got anything off the ground, before they even secured their business license, any of those pieces, because we saw so many mistakes being done or so many bad decisions being made at the very beginning that just really kind of ruined the experience for them. But I think, you know, one of the aspects that I always think about as far as, you know, a common mistake that I've seen from startup entrepreneurs is that not really fully understanding the cost of the capital they're leveraging, whether it's that they haven't really read the fine print about, say, an interest rate. Maybe they've applied for an online loan without really fully understanding that the interest rate posted is really for 3 months, not the entire year. Or maybe they're not even thinking about the opportunity cost of something intangible like running a crowdfunding campaign. Like, they think it's going to be easy to do a crowdfunding campaign on GoFundMe, but without fully understanding, that means that you have to do a lot of work. You have to talk to a lot of friends. You got to excite them about your initiative. You got to really kind of let go of your shame, because you got to be out there selling yourself and putting yourself out there. And some people are really uncomfortable with doing that. And that's a different kind of cost to the capital, but it's definitely a cost because it's time and effort. It's time and effort that you could be using for something else. How would you advise someone, or how have you done in the past when somebody's trying to weigh, okay, the options and really as it relates to cost of capital? How do you advise on that?
You know, I always go back to the business owner and say, hey, what are you really good at? Are you really good at making car parts? Are you really good at making 3D prints? Are you great at making the best brewed coffee or beer? And if that's what you're best at and that's how you make your money, then that's where you need to spend most of your time. That's your opportunity cost. It's different per business and person, depending on their rate per hour, whether it's $50 an hour or $500 an hour. And then it's better for you to spend your time doing that and running your business, making an Excel, than running a crowdfunding campaign. You're right. It does take a long time to run a crowdfunding campaign. And some may think, well, you know, that's better than going and getting a loan. Well, maybe not. If it takes 3 to 6 months to do crowdfunding, but it takes a month to get bank financing, then maybe it's not the best way to look at it. It takes a lot of time to access the right capital. it's in your best interest to kind of let an expert or advisor or consultant to kind of help you along the way, because that's what they specialize in. You specialize in making car parts. They specialize in access capital. So why don't you make money and then let them help you get money at the same time? It's also good to remember that the faster you get the capital, the more it's going to cost. So for example, like Jesse mentioned, online lending. Sometimes online lending, you can get the money in a day, but you end up paying like over 100%. But a bank loan, which takes a little bit more time, hopefully you plan for it, and that's what we're talking about today, it could be between 5% and 8% for a bank loan. So a lot less than 100%. And if the cost of capital is too high, it could take you out of business. That's cost of capital altogether. You just lose everything if you try to get it too fast, if you're too eager and you don't really understand how much it's really going to cost your business.
On the online lending piece, since I know that's become a much more popular source of capital, can you elaborate? Well, you mentioned that some people can sign up for something like as high as 100% interest rate, but how is that possible? How do people get tricked when it comes to online lending?
So online lending, you know, they don't have a brick and mortar like the bigger banks. So they're not paying money for that in large staffing. They're just paying money for like what you mentioned earlier, like a lot of fancy digital ads that are all over the place that, and possibly it may not even be digital. They might be print. They might be coming in the mail and you might just be opening it. And the great thing about online lenders is that they do something that traditional lending doesn't do. And it's easy for them to do it. They just don't do it. And that is, they give business owners the answers that they want to know if they're even fundable in the same day. And traditional lenders, they take anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks, maybe 6 weeks to come back and tell you no. But online lenders, they tell you in a day, like, hey, you're approved. The reason why it could go up to 100% is you can do what's called merchant card advance. So if you take credit cards as a form of payment and you go to a lender and say, hey, you know, I normally do about 15 grand a month in credit card, you know, I bring in about credit card payments, about 15 grand a month. You can go to an online lender called a merchant card advance, and they'll advance you 3 months of what you normally get in your credit cards. That's 45 grand. And then you end up paying for it daily, and then it adds up. So the problem with the online lenders is they're not regulated. They don't have to be. There's no rules or laws or anything right now that says that they have to be forthright and coming around what their rate is. It's like a factor of a rate. And you have to be either a NASA scientist or some sort of other like mathematical genius to understand what they're talking about in their terms and conditions, and they don't have to be super transparent like a lender. There are some online lenders like Cabbage and OnDeck and some other players that have been around for a while that they do say that this is our rate, and it might be a little lesser, maybe like 20% or 15%. But for traditional capital, as a business owner and entrepreneur, you should not probably take anything more than 10% if you're getting a loan. That's what I recommend.
So Scott, let me ask you about, let's go back to you talking about SBA loans. If you get an SBA loan, right, are there restrictions on that loan? Like particularly if you're starting out and you're brand new, like are there restrictions or only uses of that loan?
So for an SBA loan, there are no restrictions per se. Traditionally, if you're under 2 years in business, they call you a startup. I call it an early stage business, but most lenders will say that if you haven't been in business 2 years, then you are a startup and you have to get an SBA loan. So the great thing about the SBA loan, so SBA does not do the loans and they don't fund them and they don't make the approvals or the declines. SBA is like an insurance risk for the banks. The banks have to say yes, and then SBA will back it. And if you fail to pay it back as a business owner, SBA will come back and pay like, you know, anywhere from 50 to 80% of the loan as an insurance risk to the lender. So it's kind of like a security blanket for lenders. SBA wants to do loans. They want to guarantee loans. They guaranteed $5 billion last year in the state of California. It's not that if you go to a bank and you say, hey, you know what? I want to get an SBA. I want to get a startup loan. And the lender says, well, you know what, Jesse? You know what? SBA doesn't like you and they're not going to give you a loan. And if they said that, they completely straight up lied to you, because SBA doesn't say we want to approve or decline loans. The bank has to approve it first. And then they go to SBA and say, hey, we want to do this loan. Can you just guarantee it for us, please? And then they say, okay. So there's no true restrictions on SBA. Banks make it seem like there's restrictions on SBA, but it's all dependent on the banks and the lenders. And if they said that to you, they lie to you. And if you want to like take them to like, you want to go down there and like show them what's up, you just call Scott Rogowski and I'll go down there with you.
And are there specific lenders though, Scott? Like, or can any bank has like access to going to get an SBA guarantee?
So any bank can call SBA and say, hey, we want you to guarantee our loans. There's certain banks that don't like SBA for some reason. So in the state of California, we have what's called state guarantee banks. It's run through iBank, the Governor's Office of Economic Development, called GoBiz. They have this division called iBank. So some lenders, they don't want to deal with the arduous process of doing an SBA loan because it's a lot of paperwork and all that other good stuff. Well, iBank, there's like a lot less paperwork. It's a little bit more lenient. The guarantee is not as long, but that doesn't really matter for the end user. For the customer, the client, it might be more of a simple process. But to answer your question, Sid, you know, before COVID, there was, I think, 3,000 lenders nationally that did SBA loans. During COVID, right now, and then, you know, after it hit, now there's 5,500 lenders. Because of the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program, and the EIDL, and all this other great stuff, there's a bunch of other lenders that jumped on and said, heck yeah, we're ready to be on your team right now. We don't care what we thought about you before. We're ready to save businesses and get them financing. Because again, like we said, it has nothing to do with SBA. It has everything to do with the bank. Any bank can be an SBA lender.
So Scott, you know, we've been talking about those businesses in that startup phase, you know, under 2 years. Let's start thinking about more established businesses, right? So consider like a business that's had a couple years under their belt. At this point, you know, hopefully they've got a positive cash flow. They're ready to expand. You know, I really think a key action step before pitching a lender or venture capitalist is in optimizing the business, making sure that it's lender or investor ready, right? So how do you advise like that business to focus their pitch? Is it the business plan? Is it the credit score? You know, is it the management team, or is it something completely else?
It's funny. A lot of people talk about pitching to investors. They don't ever say, hey, I'm going to go pitch to a lender. But that's essentially what you're doing. The only difference with an investor is that you are actually pitching. You're not applying for a loan. But for a lender, you may go and pitch, but they don't really care about that too much, because they just want to take an application and run you through the process. They don't want to like have a conversation with you. And that's why it's so hard for business owners to know if they're going to get capital from a lender, because they take applications instead of having conversations. And with investors, they have conversations instead of taking applications. So it's a, I wish the system was a little bit different and that we could teach business owners, and this is what we do our best at and try to, is teach them how to pitch to lenders so that they can have a conversation before taking an application and running their credit. So, you know, a lot of the pitches, they come up to like three things. If you're actually going to pitch to an investor, why you or your team, why are you the best people to run, operate, and grow this business? Why this product or service, you know, has it been validated and people are buying it? Why do people buy it? And then why now? Why are you growing and expanding now as an existing business? And why is your product the most needed thing right now, especially during kind of the pandemic and COVID? So if you need to like really convey these three things, how to articulate them before you apply, you know, so an expansion plan, so a business plan would be something you'd use for like a startup. An expansion plan is a really good document to have. And what you do with the expansion plan is you explain how you started, how you got to where you are now, and how you plan to get to where you want to go. And this is demonstrated by the story of you, your team, the validity of the product, service, your marketing growth plan. Do you understand the market analysis within that? Your competition, do you understand your competition? And then your projections, which is like your forecasting. Like, do you know how much money you're going to make in the future? And if you do, what are the assumptions behind that? Like, I'm going to sell 1,000 cups of coffee in the month of October because of this. Or, you know, how are you going to be able to back up your projections and your numbers? So I don't know if I specifically answered your question, Sid, but it's all encompassing all that expansion plan, credit score, management team. It's really the story. And if you can convey the story in a document, and then your financials, tell how your financials kind of back that up, and then work with a consultant or advisor to best pitch it to a lender so you don't have to run your credit multiple times, is what I strongly recommend.
So Scott, is item 4 on your 3-point list perhaps the plan on how you're going to pay it back? I know you're talking about like kind of the revenue generation, but is that also help close the loop when you're talking to someone who is, you know, potentially going to make you a loan or perhaps even be an investor?
Definitely. For an investor, it's a little bit different because investors, they're asking for like some sort of equity stake. They're trying to get a part of your business. So you may just be able to pay them back through profits, or maybe you're going to go IPO and you're going to become public and everybody's going to be happy and that's how you're going to pay them back. But for a lender, yeah, it's really important actually for a lender and investor for you to know exactly how much money you need, what you're going to do with it, like you're going to buy staffing or buy equipment, buy building or whatever, and how you are going to pay it back. So yes, and you could do that through your existing revenue or through your projections. Like, hey, we're going to buy this piece of equipment because we're going to be able to brew, you know, 10 more beers instead of the 5 beers we have, and we're going to take over Sierra Nevada. And because of this, we're going to be able to pay back the loan like 100-fold, no problem. So yeah, you just have to kind of explain to what money you're going to get, whether you get working capital to buy, you know, buy more staffing so that you can grow your sales team. And then you can go from, you know, just California to across the country. And that will allow you to grow your sales and enhance, you know, and pay back your loan.
What I always think about when it comes to these kinds of different relationships with financiers is how different the approach is. So if you're pitching for venture capital, the way I've always seen it is that you're presenting, you have a formal deck in front of essentially an audience, sometimes not just the investor, but other people who are part of that kind of organization, if it's an organization that you're pitching to. And then there's an evaluation, like you speak, they have questions, they're drilling into specific aspects, but it is very much like that kind of presentation format. But with a lender, at least in my experience, has been you're sitting down one-on-one, you're close together, you're pouring over your financials. It's much more personal, you know, like you have to be very willing to kind of reveal a lot of things because they're going to be digging into everything about you, your personal life, all that kind of nuance. And I'm wondering, do you provide that kind of training to small businesses on that kind of interpersonal experience? How do, for those who maybe are really uncomfortable with doing that, do you provide coaching, or how much coaching do you provide along that line so people can get comfortable in having that kind of a relationship with the banker?
I had this joke where, like, if I coach a business owner on how to go and talk to a lender, they would kill the deal every time. They would say something that they're either not supposed to say, or they'll say it wrong, or they'll just talk on behalf of their CPA that this is why those numbers are the way they are, and they've got a problem with it. I don't know. You know, I make, you know, cars run. I don't know. So, you know, it's interesting, Jesse. Like, we like to go the next step from that and not just coach them, but we like to kind of hold their hand and walk them down to the bank or work with them on a phone call or a Zoom call with their lenders and help them understand their story. Because like I said earlier, like, business owners know exactly what they do, their product or service. They know how to make their product or sell their service, deliver their service better than anybody. What they don't know how to do is talk about their financials and why a lender or an investor should give them money, because they're either too technical or they're too like granular or too engineering, too detail oriented. They don't know how to like talk the language of lending. Like, and it's hard to talk it. And that's why I think groups like the SBDC and other advisory groups exist, is that we're able to kind of to be like either a mediator or a translator. Like, we speak all languages. We speak the business language, because a lot of us are entrepreneurs, or we speak the lender language, because some of us were lenders. So we speak both languages and we know how to translate it so that a lender will love to hear and take it in. So instead of just coaching the business owner and just saying, hey, you're out there with the wolves, you're just like running around crazy, you know? Instead of doing that, we actually go there with them. We enter the dark halls with them and say, hey, it's not that scary. You know what? Actually, watch us talk to the lender so you can learn, and we'll work with you so we can be your advocate, your like lender advocate, and help you get this money.
Scott, you talked about mediator, you said translator, and I heard you just say coach. And I actually wanted to dig a little bit into the coach side of this, because how often have you, or a consultant that you've heard of, walk into somebody down to the bank and the business owner just freezes, right? Because they're just kind of scared about like, A, the presentation, or actually kind of like making a pitch like this. Like, so, you know, is that part of the job too? So like, it's, I'll call it part coach, part therapist, to help people kind of get through that process?
It's definitely therapeutic for sure. You know, it's thinking on the fly. We are there, you know, as their advocate. You know, we're there like as their companion and helping them, you know, convey what they're trying to convey to get the financing they're trying to get, so they can either save their business like in a pandemic, or grow their business, or launch their business. Yeah, we do a lot of coaching, and it seems like therapy right now. It does, especially during this pandemic, because like everybody's losing their mind and they don't even know what's going on, or how to act, or how to get their financials together, or how to keep their doors open, or how to like, you know, make people spread apart, but then also bring in the finances and then fund it and then all this stuff. It's all that encompassing. And we've had to actually transition and pivot ourselves as an organization on how to best approach business owners and, you know, kind of take them over that hump and make them feel comfortable so it's not so daunting. It's been challenging and fun at the same time.
Scott, I'm old enough to remember a time when my parents had a very personal relationship with their banker. I remember my first experience with the bank was with Security Pacific Bank, which no longer exists. But I remember how deeply involved the banker that we connected with was in our lives. Like, they knew the ins and outs of my dad's barbershop. They helped me save up for my first Atari, you know, my first savings account, coached me on how best to save around that. And I'm just really curious, is that kind of relationship still possible? And also, maybe a follow-up to that, is it now possible because of COVID-19 where people have had to really get to know their bank intimately because of these different lending programs? I'm really curious, is that the idea of having this really deep connection with somebody still even possible in this day and age where it's so easy to switch banks or banks are being acquired? Just want to get your thoughts on that.
I don't think it's as deep as that, where they're like helping people buy Ataris and stuff like that. I wish it was. And I think more on a business level, it's still possible to get to that level, like your dad's barbershop, that like deep, intimate level where they know like what's going on. They drive by, they see him putting up a sign, or they drive by and seeing him. He has more barbers in there. I think it's possible, but it's definitely harder to find and capture. You know, there's a trust factor. You know, if you go to a bank as a business owner and you're starting a brand new relationship and they're not open with you and telling you, like, because, you know, everybody's bankable. Everybody can put money in a bank and be bankable, but not everybody's fundable. Meaning, is that lender going to give you money? Like, do they like restaurants? Do they like startups? Do they like early stage businesses? Do they like businesses that make most of their money, you know, internationally? You know, what is their lending landscape? And that's something that's very hard to extrapolate from lenders. And I just think that the trust factor should be more upfront. The business owner, there's some onerous on the business owner where they should ask more questions rather than just saying, hey, you guys take money? Oh my goodness, that is amazing. You guys will let me pay my checks? No way. Can I scan them at my desk? Oh my goodness, that's awesome. Well, it should go beyond that. Hey, I'm here to grow. I want to start my business. I want to grow it. I want to find a partner in that. Are you going to be here for me for long term to help me grow and finance and all this other stuff? And I think if all that is set up front, there'll be, you know, a lot less, you know, broken hearts later.
You know, I can't stop but think about Jesse's comment about the banker helping him save up for his first Atari. It just makes me think that, like, you know, all I could imagine was a scene out of Jerry Maguire, right? I mean, you're trying to, like, you know, create a way of, like, deeper connection with, like, their clients, right? And I... But that's all I got, Jesse, was Jerry Maguire at the very end, where he's like, you know, his client is like crying and telling him how much he loves him. And, you know, the other agent is just like, you know, this is like totally removed from reality.
But, you know, he lost all of his clients at the very beginning with that approach. Maybe that's what the lenders figured out. Like, okay, it's good for maybe a small select group of clients, but maybe most people, they're just happy doing it all online, right?
But it's true, because, I mean, you even called out the point that Security Pacific Bank no longer exists, right? I mean, so, like, yeah, you have exactly. a lender that's that deeply invested in your father's business and in your father's family, and now that bank is gone, right? But, I mean, but you got to believe that in today's world, right, where we have moved away to like this more online kind of like relationship or transactional relationship, that the Jerry Maguire model, I think, could still work today.
It definitely could. Interesting. You know, the banks that are getting the best praise right now during this pandemic are the really, really small ones. The ones that have one location in the country or two locations in one state. Those are the ones that are getting the most praise because of how fast they jumped on this pandemic financing. And also that Jerry Maguire or that Atari-esque type relationship, they still have time to exist. The bigger, larger banks just did not come to the plate with that, you know, during this time, unfortunately.
So, Scott, you have worked with a lot of small businesses. What has surprised you the most about their challenges in accessing capital?
Still, there's so much that is not, like, I think of the Wizard of Oz, like, hey, what's behind the curtain? I go and apply at a bank and it takes them 2 seconds to run credit. It's still surprising to me that banks, with all the technology that exists and all the lenders that exist online And banks complain all the time. Well, how come they're going online and getting capital? Well, you know why? Because they gave them an answer in a day. Like, you have access to give them answers in a day. But guess what? You choose not to. You choose to, like, go fake it. Like, you're going to go behind the curtain and you're like, hey, you're going to whisper like, hey, Jesse, guess what? I don't like this. I don't like this deal. You know why? Because their paper, like they wrote it in purple ink. I don't like it. I don't know why, you know, why they do that. You know, like all this weird stuff that has nothing to do with them actually getting the capital. You know how easy it is to run credit? You can run credit in like, you know, a couple seconds. And you know how easy it is to do a cash flow analysis? Very quickly, as long as you know how to look at a P&L. So it's, I'm still surprised how long it takes for banks to come back to business owners and say, hey, yeah, we want to do this deal. In our organization, we don't have our business owners just go out there and apply to a bunch of banks because then it just runs their credit, right? What we do is we shop the market for them at no cost and without running their credit. So what we do is we look at like a loan scenario request, like, hey, Jesse wants to start a business and he wants to start a coffee shop and he has a couple years of experience and working at a restaurant. So he has that, you know, customer service experience. He has a job. He makes 50 grand a year. He can pay his bills and he can pay this new loan. So yeah. What do you think? Do you like startups that do coffee shops? What do you think about that? He's never owned a business, but he has pretty decent credits, like 680. He doesn't have any bankruptcy, short sales or foreclosures. He just doesn't have a lot of credit. What do you think? And have a conversation about it. And that's where, you know, it's the biggest surprise for me. And that's why I know it's a super big challenge for business owners, because banks don't have conversations. And the problem, Sid, is that it's a regulatory issue. It's a system issue, right? Like, banks are regulated. They're not allowed to discourage you from applying when you walk up to the, you know, door and talk to them. You have to take an application because they can't. It's a Fair Credit Opportunity Act and all this other stuff. So they're not allowed to discourage you. Like, you know, you tell them you have a 680, but their minimum is 685. Then technically you don't qualify, but they're not allowed to say that. They just have you apply.
Huh. Oh, that's really interesting, because at first I thought what you were saying was that it's like a car salesman. They go behind the scenes, talk to the manager, because they're trying to spring some additional cost or something else into your deal, right? But really what you're saying is that they already know you're not approved. They're just pretending like you have still hope. And so they exactly. Wait a day or 2 days. Interesting. It's really kind of sad. I mean, you know, as a business owner myself, I want to know bad information right away so I can make decisions, because time is money. I'd rather know. And that, I mean, it just makes me think, Of course, I would then go to an online lender. Whoever's going to give me the fastest information is going to get my business. Why would I ever wait around for someone to string me along? That doesn't make any sense. That's really interesting.
It is, because like in a world that we live in today where you can get so much information at your fingertips, you know, this seems to be a system that has not caught up. Or there are like lenders that have caught up who are online, but have different parameters by which they're working under, right? I mean, it is fascinating like that big banks haven't like, you know, can't catch up maybe. And is it a regulatory issue? Like, I mean, we just had a conversation, Scott, about advocacy, right? And so is there a role to play in advocacy to change that? Or is it actually good that banks are so overly regulated that they can't tell you, oh, you have a 680 and our floor is 685.
It's a regulatory issue for sure. And the advocacy, yes, that's like a whole totally another topic that we can jump on a podcast, have a lot more fun with that, you know, it'd probably bore a lot of people. But yeah, so changing the laws and, you know, signing new bills and all this other good stuff. Yes, Sid, you know, there's something that we should stand up for and go, you know, fight the good fight for that. But you know what Jesse said, and it's true. One of these questions about opportunity cost, time is money, right? If I knew I could walk into a bank today and find out if I get financing today, then I wouldn't have to go online and get all excited that I can get financing. Like, I can get the money in my bank account today from an online lender. Who cares how much it costs? I need the money today. I got to pay my people today. I can't wait to get paid from my clients. But you know what's funny is most business owners, they all say, how fast do you need the money? I need the money today. I need it in a week. I need it in 2 days. I need it in 2 weeks. But really, if you look at their cash flow and how their cash runs through their business, they really could wait a month, but they think they need it today. And most traditional bank financing, it can take 3 to 4 weeks if they have all their financials together and if the lender is very transparent with them. But nobody has time for, you know, for them to come back 3 to 4 to 6 to 8 weeks to come back and say, I'm sorry, no, we can't do that loan for you.
And it's also, if you're online and you're seeing
messaging saying, oh, we can give you an answer in 24 hours or less, then it creates this perception like, oh, that's the normal time it should take. And so anything over that is ridiculous. It's almost like this cycle, this never-ending circle of, false understanding of what's really required. And the banks, unfortunately, aren't being transparent about why it's delayed, or they're unable to really share the reality of that. So, it's really interesting to once you dive into it. You know, Scott, during this COVID-19 time, we're just seeing millions of small businesses just getting decimated by the pandemic due to, lack of sales. Most communities are still closed under one public order or another. With all these small businesses, they're just doing what they can to survive. And I know that you've been on the front line. You've been working across the state, really helping all these programs think through how to best support small businesses, especially around access to capital. So what are some of the key lessons? I know, what have you seen? What have been your key takeaways from your financing work with impacted small businesses during this time?
It's a very challenging time, as we all know. It's very sad and heartbreaking. And the one thing that we have learned from this pandemic financing is that regardless of what you hear in the news and your business advisor, your coach, your CPA, your partners or whatever, we always tell people, don't hesitate to apply. It doesn't matter. You can't disqualify yourself up front because you don't know. I don't know. SBA doesn't know. Nobody knows until you apply. So you shouldn't disqualify yourself. You should not hesitate to apply, regardless if the money is not forgiven or not. Like, some of this money is forgiven and some of it's not forgiven. It's the best, cheapest money out there right now to save your business. You kind of have to ask yourself, do you want to save your business? Do you not want to save your business? Is it worth it to save your business? If it's worth it, then take out the money. If it's not worth it, then maybe it's best to fold or sell at a discount. It's hard to say that to businesses. Like, you know, I'm a true believer, very positive in saving businesses and helping them grow and start. And I'd like to save them all, but it's not feasible to. So in getting financing for your business during this time, it's really important that you have all your financials in order, just like you would for your tax person, is get your taxes, your income statement, your balance sheet, your personal financial statement. You know where you were before the pandemic. Like, were you going to have a banner year? Was it going to be better than 19? Do you have your numbers for 19? Unfortunately, taking your numbers for 19 and putting it into 20 doesn't work because 20 is like this crazy new time. But understanding where you're going, are you going to be able to survive COVID? If you are, great. What does that look like? Does your 2021 look like your 19? If you don't know, then, you know, meet with somebody and kind of understand that and know that. But it's good to be very prepared, have all your financials together, and, you know, just really know where your business is going or where it was going, and then if you're going to be able to survive COVID or not.
Scott, you know, the federal government has been doing all the stimulus packages, trying to figure out ways to kind of, you know, get people to have a crutch, if you will, to get through all of this. That has kind of manifested itself as in vehicles like the Paycheck Protection Program and Economic Injury Disaster Loan, you know, and other kind of special grants. You know, and they're just trying to figure this out, right? Like, they're all just like throwing ideas against the wall. So if to get to 2021, and that 2021 is a better year than 2019, this is what we need to know from you, Scott Rogalski, which is, if you had a magic wand, what do you think is needed to ease the burden of businesses today so that in 2021, they're stronger than they were in 2019?
I wish I had a magic eight ball, like everybody says. I wish I could go back to the times where we played Atari and things were more simple and we could easily figure this out. Is it best just to sit up in DC and print money all day? I don't know. Is it best to offer all these great loans, the Paycheck Protection Program, the Economic Injury Disaster Loan? Yeah, in theory, if they launched it and as such, just like, hey, here's PPP, here's EIDL, here's all the parameters, it might have worked out well, right? And it might have allowed us to get into 2021 with no fears and not as much bankruptcies or business losses. You know, and some would think that more cash is going to solve all the problems. I really think it comes down to knowing how to run and operate your business. Do you truly understand your business model and concept and what it is and what it could be and where it could go? Do you have the triumph? Do you have the commitment? Do you have the faith to take it the next 100 yards to, you know, score that next touchdown and get to, you know, 2021? I would say that, you know, out of all the businesses that I've seen close, in the state of California. I would like to challenge them to find help, whether it be SBDC or SCORE or Women's Business Center or the PTAC or something, you know, some sort of organization that can help them, and really sit down with them and call them out. Go on all the social media and say, hey, where's the business advisors that I hear about? I want them to come down to my business and talk to me and see if I'm running my business the right way, the right operational way, the right financial way, the right, like, with my staff way. Am I negotiating my lease the best? Like, are you using all the opportunity and resources and tools that are out there for you at no cost? Are you utilizing them all? And if you're not, then maybe it wasn't best for you to stay in business. And, you know, there is no magical wand that we can, you know, say like, oh yeah, cool, man. I'll just give everybody $1 million. Everybody be cool. Don't worry about it. It'll all be forgiven. You don't have to pay it back. It's totally cool. And that's, unfortunately, the government has created a lot of confusion around these loans, right? Are they forgiven? Are they not forgiven? How much are they? How much are they not? When do I have to pay it back? The one thing they've done for the business owners that I think is amazing is they prolong the payments. So if you got a loan for PPP and EIDL this year, you don't have to make a payment until next year, which is awesome. And I think it's because it's buying them time to figure out how much they're going to forgive and how much they're not going to forgive. And we're in this lull right now where business owners are freaking out, like, how much can we forgive? How much not forgive? I don't know. Nobody knows, but we have time to figure it out. Let me sit there with you and help you with operations and figure out what is going to save your business.
Kind of to your point, I think what's really interesting about this time is that it does allow for reimagining your business. Or if you did lose your business, how do you reconceptualize and do it better the next time? It's like an intricate henna design where you're able to really think about all the different pieces, get the expert advice, and really create a product, a service, a business that is going to be stronger and better. And so during this period where everybody's a little bit of a standstill, you can solicit advice, you can rethink your approach, you can get insights into maybe some pieces of your business that weren't quite working. And the awesome part here in California is that we do have a ton of resources. There's all these federal technical assistance partners that are ready and willing to lend that hand. And often the biggest challenge is just making sure people are getting connected, that they're aware of these services and know how to access them. You know, I do have another question for you related to just thinking about the future with so many things going online, so much digital, and we talked a lot about that. But what do you think is the future for small business financing? Do you think that these online lenders are going to win the market? Do you think that it's all about crowdfunding? Is there something else that we should be looking at as far as new products, new services? Where do you think we're all heading?
It's a great question. I think it's going to come down to a little bit of AI, artificial intelligence, a little bit of machine learning. I don't think that it's going to completely take the human out of everything for accessing capital. I don't think it's crowdfunding because of the costs and it's too time consuming. We kind of talked about that earlier. I don't think it's online lending because a lot of them are getting regulated right now and they're either going out of business because of COVID, or some of the online lenders are getting bought out by big banks right now. And there's a lot of federal and state agencies, SBA, maybe iBank, you know, that are acknowledging that they can't do it alone on their archaic, you know, platforms and systems to actually meet the needs of the business owners as fast as they need to do it, because they will go out of business. And because of that, they have tapped into fintech type properties, financial technology as fintech, anything that's technically, you know, make it better, faster, and putting technology into anything that's financial, whether it be insurance or banking or you know, possibly blockchain. But I think that where it's going is it's going to be a hybrid. Instead of the online lenders playing all by themselves and they're like, you know, fancy suites, hedge funds, and traditional bank financing making it, you know, really, you know, archaic and they're, you know, in their offices or dark offices, I think there's going to be a hybrid. There's going to be more mergers of online lenders and traditional bank financing that should have taken place maybe 10 years from now. That's going to be accelerated drastically, and it's going to happen over the next 2 years. There's either going to be a lot of big banks that are going to go out of business or fintech companies that are going to buy banks. And that's going to be an interesting paradigm shift for business owners. I don't think banks are going to go out of business, but they are starting to buy fintech companies, and fintech companies like SoFi, the one that specializes in student loans, they actually put in their bid to become a bank, a licensed bank in the country. So we're going to see a lot more of that. And we're also going to see a lot more of banks buying fintech companies.
That's interesting. Yeah, I remember hearing PayPal diving into the financing realm. And I wonder if you're going to see maybe those that are really excellent around customer service if they decide to go into this realm, they would own the market. It's going to be fascinating to see if some lenders have really learned themselves from this experience and the value, that interpersonal connection. Because I actually seen that quite a bit, where these makers really feel like they've been in the trenches with these business owners. And I wonder if you're going to see something new emerge around that, a different style of approach around banking. But, you know, I guess time will tell.
You know, it's crazy. There's some news that just came out in the FinTech Insider that American Express just bought Kabbage, which is insane that a credit card company bought a online lender that does small business lending. I think there's going to be a lot more of that happening where, you know, Square Capital took on a lot more deposits with this whole Paycheck Protection Program. And now they're inching towards Goldman Sachs as far as how many people actually do business with them. So it's a very interesting time. I agree with you.
You know, Jesse, if American Express just bought Kabbage, you and I should start a new business called Lettuce and see if American Express will buy it.
Good idea. Good idea. Add that to the list.
Lettuce, or what about Henna Capital? What about that?
Henna Capital. That's
the design.
Perfect.
You know, the design. Yeah, the design of money. I love it.
Great idea, I love it. Hey, so Scott, you've now given us like a crystal ball, right? What you think was going to happen kind of moving forward. Now we're curious about you sharing any parting advice to entrepreneurs or small businesses.
Yeah, I think that from this call and all the great questions you guys have asked and the insights that we've shared, I think what we've found out is that entrepreneurs and existing business owners, you're not alone out there. We know that you can't do it alone. You know, the best approach to accessing capital or staying in business or starting your business right now is to work with a team of advisors, coaches, therapists. You know, we kind of talked about all of them today here. And just know that we're here for you at no cost. There's resources out there. And we specialize in our main purpose for existing is to help businesses start, grow, sell, and save your business, save your employees. And I challenge all of you to reach out to us.
Awesome, man. Well, it's been great having you on. Thanks again for all your time.
You're welcome. Thank you very much, Sid and Jesse.
Scott gave us some great advice during today's episode. Some key takeaways on financing included: gain advice early as you start your business. Consider the opportunity cost of your financing options. When it comes to being bankable or fundable, it's all about answering the key questions for your investor or for your lender, including why you, why your product or service, why now, and probably most importantly, how will you pay it back or how will you return on that investment? As we're all going through this COVID-19 strange pandemic time, even during this time of stress, there's still opportunity to think about how do you innovate? You know, how do you redesign your business? Where do you take it from here? How do you take advantage of what 2021 is going to be for your business, which is going to be a much more positive time than 2019 or 2020 ever was? So now's a great time to get expert advice, to get feedback, and to reach out to all those technical assistance partners that operate here in the state of California that are able to give you free one-on-one consulting and training. So take advantage. You may have noticed a few references about Henna during today's episode. We wanted to let you in on the backstory. Here's Scott. Rogowski, we've been talking quite a bit about Henna. We've been peppering the episode with Henna. Can you break it down why we keep bringing it up?
Yeah, you know, I made the mistake of showing Jesse, who I thought was my friend, there's some art that I got done on my hand. I didn't know what it was called, you know, but like I knew that it might have been called Henna. I went to this convention for Lions Club. I was doing my good deed, being a service to my community, and it was the district director. He's Indian and good friend of mine, and he goes, "Hey Scott, you should get some henna. You know what you should do? You should let it stay on for a long time, because the longer you let it stay on, Scott, it soaks in and it becomes very vibrant." I'm all, "Hell yeah, where should I do it?" He goes, "Sure, on your hand, on your left hand, you know, so everybody can see it." So, all right, I don't have tattoos, but hell yeah, let's do this. So I put it on and, you know, I left it on for like 3 days. And then the next day, like 2 days later, was Small Business Week. And Small Business Week is all about small businesses. And, you know, I get invited to events and I get to talk to them and blah, blah, blah. And then I run into Jesse and Jesse said, "Hey, what the hell's on your hand?" I said, "Oh, I don't know. There's just some art, man. It doesn't matter. Don't worry about it, man. It's totally cool." No. "What is that? It looks like you got hit. You got hit." I said, yeah, I guess I did, man. But it's okay. Don't worry about it. It's fine." So ever since that day, that was like on a Monday. And then Tuesday, I was on TV, and then I went to go meet the district director for SBA, and he's all, hey, what's on your hand? I said, oh, don't worry about it. You should call Jesse. Jesse knows all about it. And then ever since then, man, Jesse thinks I'm going to start a henna business. So that's why we're talking about henna capital. And Jesse, you know, makes references about the, you know, the intricacies of the henna, you know, and how it brings all together everything around financing. It's really awesome.
Well, I don't know what else to say. Maybe Sid, would you like to address this issue?
I just love the fact that Scott loves henna, and I feel like more people need to like try henna. You know, I think Scott, you know, you need to go from your left hand to your face and just like cover your face in henna. And I think when you walk into that lender's office and you've got henna on your face, it just exudes confidence.
You just don't own it, man. That's the thing. You don't own it. You're pretending and you don't own it. That's why. It wasn't about the henna. It was just that you had lack of confidence. I just hope you take that away.
All right, man. Hey, thanks. It's a really good therapeutic advice thanks for your that time. I'm learning here. I appreciate this. Yeah,
you're welcome. You're welcome. That's what Hack My Business is all about. All right. Thanks, man. Thanks for that.
You're welcome. Anytime, man. You can make fun of me. Henna for life. Peace.
If you are a California business owner seeking out resources and support, please visit our website, COVID-19BizTools.com, which provides a comprehensive listing of grants, programs, and services for COVID-19 impacted businesses. You can also visit COVID-19BizTools.com to let us know what topics you'd like us to cover. Just reach out to us on the contact page on the website. Have a great day, and we'll catch you next time on Hack My Business.